It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. I know, Mike, you and I say it all the time, but it's these times of year. I mean, there's still obviously a lot of fishing to talk about, months of fishing to talk about.
Yeah, we still got another snapper season coming on. We couldn't talk about it last week in
our show. We were embargoed is the term. Yeah. We were told by the higher-ups that we couldn't say anything about it, but now that everybody knows.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple hours after our show, they opened it up and told everybody we're going to have 3 days in October to snapper fish. So we got a lot of stuff going on. Fall fishing is just awesome, but here we are. It's hunting season.
It is hunting season.
I mean, if you haven't got your field prepared for dove season, you're going to have to go hunt with somebody else right now.
Right. Actually, we'll talk about that specifically on today's show because our guest, Migratory Game Bird Director for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, back on with us. And, yeah, so other than alligators and some big gators were killed, saw some real good gators killed. Other than alligators, the first thing, they crack it open for hunting season 2020 and 2021 is going to be doves. Hey, Seth.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, man.
Doing
good to have
good,
you back.
Seth.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, so, all eyes on the dove fields right now as people are looking at, let's talk about this, for North Zone, a Labor Day weekend start.
Yeah, we're open a week earlier in both zones this year. We looked over the past 20 years at when we'd opened, early in the 2000s, we opened probably the third weekend in September. In the mid-2000s, we opened we opened 3 years on Labor Day weekend, and then the last 10 years or so, we've been opening the second weekend, the weekend after Labor Day. And so we decided, we're going to go out and ask our hunters what they want to do. And so we did that, and we did a dove survey, a dove hunter survey, and the results came back from that, and hunters wanted to open as early as possible. We could open September 1, but, most hunters want to open that first Saturday in September, so that happened to be the Saturday of Labor Day. So that's what we're doing this year in the North Zone and in the South Zone, those 10 counties along the Florida Panhandle and along the coast there. We're going to open September 12th.
Now, okay, let's back up. So the dates have moved around, and you're talking about hunter input, and because we're going to talk waterfowl with you a bunch later in the show, and it me as, a waterfowler, I'm always looking, and we'll talk about teal season. I was always one of those people that was pushing to move teal season back, as we have. Let's get it later. Not so early. Dove hunters want to go early. Is it just to have it? I mean, when you're hearing those responses from the hunters, is it just to have it for a big Labor Day weekend and cookout and family? Or is it the fact that they got the doves then because they raised them locally? What do you hear from me? Why? Why earlier?
I think it's the fact that, one of the first seasons that opens here in September and for the hunting season. It kicks off everything. And so hunters wanted to move things, wanted more days in the early season. So we have splits, we have, a September segment and the October segment and the November segment and then the December, January segment. So, we looked at that and asked hunters when they wanted more hunting days. They wanted more hunting days in the early segment. So September, they wanted as many weekends and holidays as possible. So we're adding another holiday by adding the Labor Day holiday. And so we're at, just moving it up a week, add 7 more days in September. And so most people are out there hunting in that September season. Our hunters only average about 5.5 days a field a year for dove hunting, even though it's the most harvested species in the state and in the U.S.
And it's what,
didn't know that.
It most harvested in the U.S. and I guess, there's a lot of them out there, Seth, or are there? And where are we? Is there, the way we'll get into waterfowl later, is there any kind of trend? Do you talk to people that do what you do in other states and look at harvest numbers? Is there any trend up, down, sideways in dove harvest numbers or dove population?
The harvest numbers are they stay pretty level. The population is trending down a little bit right now, but not too much of a concern. They're still pretty high. Everything east of the Mississippi River, all the states east of the Mississippi River are in the Eastern Management Unit. There are 3 management units across the U.S. In the Eastern Management Unit, the population is predicted to be about 50 million birds. And, you know, annually in Alabama, we're harvesting about 1.5 million birds. And we have about 36,000 dove hunters in the state.
So 36,000 kill how many?
1.5 million.
Mike, you do the math. I mean, how many we kill it?
Well, I don't know. Me, I get about one a year.
Per season.
So 17 or 18 is the average. Okay. I got a. Yeah, Mike says you're one.
Yeah, my average is about one.
And then you go get a barbecue sandwich.
Well, if I got two boxes of shell, I might get two.
So the dove participation is got to be, I'm just guessing, correct me, but you're talking about how people, the number of people come out to dove hunt and they want that September. Is that because when bow season opens up, it drops off, or what happens to it when we get further into fall?
Yeah, you know, as more seasons open up, as fall continues on, I think, you know, there's other factors that go into what they're deciding to do. You know, it's an exciting time. Like I said, you know, it's one of the first things that opens up. We have a lot of participation in it. It's a family-friendly activity that you can take the kids and the wife out to do, or, you know, other friends with you to go do. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of like tailgating for football. It's one of those things you can get a lot of people together and have a good shoot. But, you know, we raise a lot of birds here in state. We band a lot of birds here in state. And then as the fall goes along, we get a good push of migratory birds from states north of us for doves. And you know, it can be good shooting throughout the season, even into January. Just a lot of people don't take advantage of it later in the season.
That's something that's on my list. I've never shot a dove with a band. And so you're doing those bandings here in Alabama and probably getting the data back from in Alabama, right?
Yeah, we do. We band annually. We have a banding quota here in state, and it's about 1,300 birds. So we do that annually, and that data really, that's how we determine the population size and then determine the bag limit and season length. You know, that data goes back, and we look at the harvest of adults versus juveniles, look at how many survive the season, and go on to reproduce broods the next season. So we can determine some of that stuff from the banding data, and, you know, it really helps us. So, yeah, we get out every year and band birds, and we get a lot of banded birds from other states up north, you know, even from Canada we get some banded doves from.
That's what I was getting ready to ask you, Seth. How far do they travel after you band them?
That's right, within Alabama, too.
Yeah, I mean, do they travel? Do the Alabama birds go on to Georgia or Florida or Mississippi, or do they kind of hang around where you band them, or what's the deal on that?
Yeah, most of our birds that we band here in state, they don't make a lot of movements. What we see is they move further south. So the birds that we band in North Alabama, as the season goes along, you'll see them get harvested in southern Alabama. If they do move out of state, they're moving to Mississippi or Georgia or Florida. But a majority of them get harvested here in Alabama. As far as birds getting being banded outside the state, you know, from everything, I think we've had some from Ontario, Colorado. We've had them from all over the U.S. Come here. And, you know, Alabama is really kind of the funnel here at the end of the flyway as far as doves go.
Okay. I mean, because you and I are going to talk some waterfowl, and then we all have our, you know our flyways for waterfowl, and then we have little sub-flyways within it and all that. So is our dove funnel fly, is it like a major one, or are we an offshoot of, like, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, or is it its own thing?
No, it's a pretty major one. You know, we are Alabama's usually in the top five of dove harvest in the United States. You know, so, you know, Georgia, us and Georgia to compete for that, you know, and Texas is a big harvest state. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, for the Eastern Management Unit, you know, all the states east of the Mississippi River, Alabama is the funnel.
What about, this is something that I remember hearing about, gosh, maybe 15, 16 years or longer, that people hunted in Baldwin County talked about it. They thought, oh, we got white wings. I'm like, wow, that'd be cool. And then it was probably 8 or 9 years ago, I shot my first white wing on a dove hunt and shot them since. Are you seeing, what are they showing up in the bag limits? Are you getting, do you have any numbers on that? How much white wing, you know, makeup bags in Alabama?
Yeah, we got a little bit of data on that from our harvest information program data. You know, we're harvesting 2,000 or 3,000 white wings a year. They're starting to show up more and more over the past 10 or 15 years. They're increasing in state, breeding here. And so, Yeah, we're starting to see them a lot more. You see them pretty much from Montgomery South. You'll see them show up and see them around. So, yeah, they do count towards your bag limit of 15 birds. We also have the collared doves here in state that are an invasive species, and you can shoot those, and they do not count against your bag limit.
Problem is they get you in trouble because every place I know that has a lot of collared doves is like in a neighborhood or near a feed and seed store. It's like right. I got to find a field.
Dolphin Island.
Yeah, Dolphin Island, no joke. On the do you see anything just on the white wing thing? I'm interested. Are they pretty much following 100% like what morning dove do, or do they prefer any kind of field more than a morning? Is there any difference to their behaviors?
No, not really. They don't flock up as much as morning doves, and neither do collared doves. Morning doves, you know, flock up in large groups. They're a little more solitary, but yeah, I mean, not a whole lot of different behaviors of as far as feeding or roosting. There's not huge numbers of them here in the state yet, but you will see them, while you're morning dove hunting. So not a whole lot of difference in hunting them.
All right, before we go to the break, and Mike, I know he's got a question, too.
I was just going to say the collared dove, I mean, they have really come on strong. There are a lot of them in the state.
Get them over my field. That's the problem. They never come over.
But, I mean, I see them now all up the country where I used to. The first place I ever saw them was Dolphin Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started spreading. You see them around Mobile. Now they're up the country, and there's a lot of them.
And Mike's talking about the black belt.
Yeah, black belt. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of them up there. So I guess they're here to stay.
Yeah, unfortunately, they are. And so, you know, there's some research out there trying to find out if they're having a potential impact on our morning doves, and we're waiting on some results of that. But, you can find them in all 67 counties now in Alabama.
How about that?
Every county. So go to the co-op near you, and you'll see them. They'll be on a power line near the feed and seed store where they're not available for hunting. All right, we're going to run the break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit more doves. And I know that, of course, Seth is in the world of management, the world of science and biology. He's not, you know, here to talk enforcement, but you can't talk about migratory birds and not talk about enforcement and what's legal.
Yes.
Like Mike said, if you don't have your dove field ready right now, with exceptions of talking about wheat, you got to go hunt with somebody else.
That's right.
All right, so we'll talk more about that when we get back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Transitional time of year. I mean, we're looking at hunting seasons within a week for the North Zone dove.
Yeah.
2 weeks here in the South Zone.
A month and a half away from bow season.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I know. We're right here.
It's here. And we got birds on the brain, at least I do today, as we're talking to the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. Great guy, Seth Maddox. We're going to talk some ducks here in a little bit, but we're talking doves right now. And as we went to the break, I said I was not going to try to put you in a corner, but I kind of did. When it comes to enforcement out there, that's one of the big stories. Probably more than anything else that I think gets hunted in Alabama, the discussion of the shooting or a dove hunt is one based on what you can and can't do to set up a dove field. So the general simple version of what you can't do, Seth.
So you can't bring in anything you don't grow on the field and spread it out, besides wheat. So if you grow something, you start early in the spring, in April or May, you can grow your longer duration crops of corn or sunflowers or grain sorghum. If you're starting a little later in the summer, you can grow your millets. And you can go in and manipulate those crops, or you can manipulate any natural vegetation you have on the field by bushhogging it or disking it down or burning it. But if you're waiting till this time of year, the only possible action you have is to prepare your seed bed and spread winter wheat. And that begins on August 1st and goes through November, and you can plant up to 200 pounds an acre.
But you can't plant it every day, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a one-time deal. Unless you're doing strips in your field, you can do strips. But if you're going back and spreading your wheat at different times, they have to stay in that one strip at a time.
Right, and that's one thing.
Double dip, essentially.
Yeah, I want people to understand that because that is a nuance I've used in the past. So you have an 8-acre field, and you're going to go ahead and prepare the seed bed and spread wheat on this strip that's an acre or two's worth.
Yeah.
And then next After that, you can move over, right? You can have planted chronologically.
Right. Yeah. As long as you maintain that seed in the new strip you're planting, you can't. Once you disc that second strip up, your seed from your second strip can't go back into your first strip and double plant that first strip.
So y'all come in there and there's wheat growing and then there's brand new seed right next to it.
Right.
Bad deal.
Yeah. And you can't plant cracked corn.
Now, Mike believes you can. Seth, can you help me with this? He's got, he's going to plant a winter cracked corn crop. Is that? Where's Mike?
No, I don't think cracked corn will germinate anyway. But can't do that either.
And talking about 200 pounds an acre for wheat too. There's some really good videos that have been done to kind of show what that looks like in a field and also what y'all consider a prepared seed bed.
Yeah, we have all that stuff information on our website. It's provided to us through the Alabama Cooperative Extension. They set those agricultural planting dates and regulations here in Alabama, and that's what we abide by. And the Fish and Wildlife Service, abides to, each state to set those limits here in the state. So, yeah, if you go to our website, outdooralabama.com, you can see some good videos we have up there about planting dove fields.
How about a little inside scoop as the migratory coordinator? What's best? I mean, have you seen? I mean, is it millet and all the different types of millet? Is it a cut cornfield? Is it milo? Is it wheat? If you could make sunflower in the state,
yeah,
we have so many different. But no,
well,
like, what are your
200 acres? You can.
That's right. You'll make 5 acres. I mean, so what do you see? What's best?
All of the above. I can't say that one's better than the other. It's really about preparing that field right before the season starts. So going in and providing an open ground. You know, doves have really really weak feet. They're not like turkeys where they can go in and scratch up the underbrush off the dirt layer. And so they need a really clean floor on your field to be able to pick up those seeds, because they can't scratch for them to get under the duff to pick up seeds. So, burning that or cutting it for hay, applying herbicide, disking some strips, all that helps those birds be able to get to the ground level to be able to pick up those seeds.
Yeah, the burning thing, even burning down with herbicide, if you didn't plant April, May, maybe you planted July, sometimes herbicide can be your friend.
Yeah, that's right. It really helps, kill off that thick layer of grass or millet or whatever you have there fully dying off yet. So it really quickens that process and speeds it up. And you can go in there with a bush hog or a rake or something on the back of your tractor and clean that field up to be able to provide that good habitat.
But I guess the herbicide doesn't affect the dove, doesn't harm the dove. Any studies on that?
No, I haven't seen anything come out about that. I haven't heard of any scientific studies that have proven that herbicide's harmful to dove at that time of year.
Yeah, okay. Don't even start that, Mike. And then you get the All right. And I guess to make this complete, too, we talked about the seasons and the earlier start. Bag limit for doves.
Yeah, it's 15 birds per day per hunter. It's mourning doves and white-winged doves in combination. And then you can also shoot collared doves, and they do not count towards that bag limit.
If you can give me some recommendations on ways to get collared doves coming in, because I would like to shoot them, but they're always...
Yeah, they're a little bigger, provided about twice the meat as a mourning dove.
They remind me of like a pigeon, man.
Yeah, they
big
are
pigeon
big.
Birds. All right, so switch gears here, as I like to do. And, I love talking ducks with you, Seth. And so I've gone all summer and been a good boy here on the show, have not even gotten into waterfowl discussion, so I'm breaking that seal right now. Let's talk about the waterfowl counts, what could migrate this year. What are we looking like for the May pond counts? What are we looking like for the Mississippi Flyway?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year for us with COVID pandemic going on and the Canadian border was closed this year for most of the year. So there was not a May pond count conducted. And a lot of the banding operations that typically go on up there in Canada were not able to happen this year. So it's been an interesting year so far. And so what we do now is we set these bag limits and season dates a year ahead of time in the flyway and at the federal frameworks. And so I just got through with the Mississippi Flyway meeting this morning, and we're already talking about frameworks for next season. So these are set a year in advance. And so what they did this year and the lack of data from the breeding bird survey in Canada and the pond counts, they were able to look at the long-term data set because we've been flying these surveys since the 1950s. We have really good data sets for these birds. And so they were able to predict, you know, what they thought the populations would be this fall using that long-term data set and some modeling. And so, you know, it looks pretty similar to last year, not a lot of changes. And so, you know, I don't predict that we'll see a whole lot of change in the fall flight. You know, like I said, we set the season dates and bag limits last August for this upcoming season that we're about to enter. And so there's really not many changes for next year either.
So we're looking at 660 for this year? Six That's ducks, right. 60 days?
Six birds, 60 days. The only change coming from last year is that the Scott population dropped a little bit during the 2019 BPOP, and that set that back into the restrictive regulations, which at the federal level is 45 days with two bird bag limit and then 15 days with one bird bag limit. But in Alabama, we decided to be a little more restrictive and go with the 60-day and one bird bag limit. And, you know, those regulations are a little easier for hunters to interpret, makes our enforcement officers' life a little easier, mm-hmm. and it allows us not to put hunters in a situation where they might be over the limit.
Well, I want to talk about that, too. When that came up and I saw that in regulations, I said, okay, this is something worth discussing. Because what is the what's canvasback limit?
Two.
Two. Could you detect the shock in my voice, Seth, when I read that? Because
yeah, I understand.
I mean, growing up, canvasbacks were the biggest worry, you know, where the population and SCOP, to be honest with you, the Mobile Tensaw Delta growing up, this would have been 80s, early 90s. SCOP were plentiful. I mean, we chose not to shoot SCOP. I mean, you know, they were like, hey, man, if times get tough and we don't find any gray ducks, just wait, the SCOP will show up. We're not seeing that. I mean, I agree with what's happening with the population. We're not. What's going on? How are canvasbacks doing well and SCOP are down? What are y'all seeing?
Well, you know, it's a totally different strategic model that we use for harvest management of those two species. You know, the canvasback population is right at 700,000, where the SCOP population is at 3.5 million. You know, if you look at the long-term data set, SCOP have been their population has been dropping the past 10 years or so. And so there's a lot of research going on to find out what is happening with SCOP. But, you know, at the flyway level, when we set these frameworks up, this SCOP harvest strategy was set back in the early 2000s. And, you know, nobody probably ever predicted that we would get to this point. But here we are at this point. And, you know, we're looking at it again. We're reevaluating this harvest strategy for SCOP, and we hope to have that change in the next couple of years, but to get away from these season within season bag limits and hunting days. So, you know, it's an awkward situation to be in, but, you know, we're working on it.
And lumping lesser and greater together, is that?
That's correct. Yeah, most people know them as bluebills. But yeah, that's together. We manage them together.
What about, well, I'll tell you what, there's the music. We'll have to ask about another species here that I think is doing better when we come back. More with the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. Seth Maddox is our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our guest, migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox. And as I prepared him, if I'm lying, I'm dying, before we even got started this morning, I said, get ready, as always, Seth, I have about 700 questions for you. So I'm like 300 and something in.
You have got a duck nerd on your hand, Seth.
I'm happy to talk it.
It's a lot of it. So we're talking about scomp and that reduction. So Alabama hunters know we're going to be looking at one here. And then, you know, when I think scomp and I think divers, I think of, we call them ringers or ringnecks, and not always, you know, in the same coastal environments. I think I see more of them up the river or in farm ponds or this or that. But they seem like, well, I have seen, in my opinion, over my lifetime, I've seen the scomp numbers just go down and down and down in the Mobile Tensaw Delta. But if I'm on a beaver pond, it seems like we got plenty of ringers around.
Yeah, you know, ringnecks act like a dabbling duck almost. They're kind of like the dabbling duck of the dabbling duck of the diving duck world. Yeah, you're seeing, I think what you're seeing too is that, you know, the scomp act more like mallards, where they're more weather dependent on their migration patterns. So we need that really cold weather to push those birds down here, whereas ringnecks act more like gadwalls, their migration pattern depends more on photo period and, you know, the length of the day. So as those days get shorter in the fall and the winter, you know, they're pushing further south. And so they'll be here pretty early and stay most of the season.
Yeah, and that calendar duck thing, for people have been duck hunting a long time, they get it. But for people maybe that are new to it and wonder why, like, we've pushed for example, for the youth day. Well, I was one of the people proposing, you know, let's go early, you know, do an early youth day because there's ducks here in the Delta. We got calendar ducks. I always say that that full moon around Halloween, you know, we get a push of ducks here. And it could be 70 degrees and we get a push of ducks here. So they're not coming because of a cold front.
No, they're coming because their brain's telling them to migrate. You know, that stuff's coming, and they want to get out of there before it hits. So they don't want any cold weather. They want to get south before any of that stuff hits, and they have problems getting south. So those ducks come early and they stay most of the year. We continue to get some throughout the season, but some of those birds, tend to come earlier, and gadwall and ringnecks are some of those species that come down earlier in the season.
We're lucky to have calendar ducks because cold winter weather push ducks might be a thing of the past. I don't know. I mean, you look at some of these, you and I were talking about last time, the long-term averages on temperature and where the actual, you know, the mallard line, as I always call it, not a technical term, will be. And it's missed us a lot here. I think it's missed some areas of Alabama entirely some years.
Yeah, it's been, unfortunately, you know, it's been, you know, mallard migration to Alabama has been decreasing over the past 15 years or so, maybe 20 years. And all that is weather driven. In the last couple of seasons, we've had pretty rough seasons. There's been a lot of water on the landscape, not a lot of cold weather. North of us, you know, in the mid-latitude states, to where there's snow cover on the ground and frozen water that push those birds further south. And so, you know, if you look at the temperature trends over the past 20 years, you know, that the average in January temperature in Alabama has probably risen by 8 or 10 degrees. Whether you believe in man-made or natural climate change, you know, it's changing, and it's always changed naturally throughout the Earth's life cycle. So we're in the period of that right now. Whether that, whether we see a long-term trend of getting warmer and warmer, or this is just a few years of warm weather, it has an effect on waterfowl hunting in Alabama for sure.
But doesn't food have something to do with that, with them not coming down here too? There's so much food. People are planting so much food for the ducks to stay up there longer. Does that make any difference too? Not only the weather, but the amount of food that people are putting out for ducks up there, up north?
It can play some into that, if we have cold weather and that water freezes up and that snow covers up that food, then they have to come south because, you know, they need that food to survive. They need so much food a day to even live through that period. So, those days of colder weather in the Midwest and the North really are the biggest driving factor for migrating birds to Alabama.
I think you and I had this discussion last time, too, just as people talk about where they'd want to secure places to hunt. If you got to leave here and go, the ideas of, you know, the South Mississippi Delta and maybe Northeast Louisiana, which can still be good, but they're not. I mean, if you had nothing but time and money, Would you get a camp in South Arkansas or South Missouri?
South Missouri.
Yeah. So what I mean, the videos I see and the reports I see, and I got a nephew who lives in Kansas, and there seems like a lot of years that's where they stack up. I want to talk about another species here that kind of is the dove discussion and the waterfowl discussion in one, and that's wood ducks. And where we are with wood ducks, I have anecdotal worries about wood ducks. What are the numbers showing you in Alabama about the wood duck population?
Population is doing really well. We don't really survey for wood ducks because it's really hard to survey for wood ducks. We count ducks from the air twice a year in Alabama, do our annual surveys. You can't pick those out from the plain because they're in these hardwood swamps, buttonbush swamps where you can't pick them out from the air. And so what we do there is we band wood ducks during the summer like we talked about earlier with doves, and that's how we track the population of wood ducks throughout the U.S. And, they've been doing well. We've had a couple years of high harvest over the past 4 or 5 years, but, populations still seem to be strong. It's still our number one harvested bird here in Alabama annually. We're banding 1,000 a year or so, and that helps us track that population. I don't have any concerns about wood ducks right now. Even since we went to the third bird in the bag back in 2008, populations seem to still be relatively stable and growing.
Yeah, it's completely anecdotal, and it may be down here at this neck of the woods. You know, we've stayed flooded for so long, spreads that peanut butter real thin on that piece of toast. You know, the wood ducks have so many places to go. But I haven't, completely non-scientifically anecdotal, have not seen the concentrations in the places I've seen in the past. I also wonder, too, with the popularity of the last couple of decades of waterfowl, I've seen populations shift where they go because they get shot in the same place all the time. Have you seen anything that shows that affects wood ducks at all?
Yeah, we don't have any real good data on that. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely can screw up a great wood duck place by shooting, late at night when they're coming into roost or certain times like that. But, I think in the Delta what you're seeing is, we've had several years of high flood stages, and it's just degrading the habitat, for these last couple of years. And it's been hard to grow really good food sources for the wood ducks up in the upper Delta and stuff. And those floods have really washed away a lot of the food source or prevented some of that food source from growing. And so, we probably had a couple of tough years for wood ducks down there, and that may have led to the reductions you're seeing in that general area.
Yeah, because the food source thing, I think what could happen to somebody just getting into waterfowl in Alabama and watch one too many videos from Arkansas and look at new water pushes, I've hunted over there for 2.5 decades, but we'd follow new water. We're hunting acorns and flood water. Just not the story here so much. And it's also the kinds of acorns, right?
Yeah. The bigger acorn producing trees, they're not very palatable to the ducks. They need that the white oak species of trees that produce those smaller acorns, like water oak and willow oak, are more palatable to ducks. They can swallow them, they can eat them. And then later in the year they turn to invertebrates, which are those bugs that live in the water. That are really good in calcium and high protein sources. So, when we get these floods down there, it washes away a lot of these sources of food. And so these ducks have to move around and to try to find areas that are shallow enough, one, to be able to feed in, because they don't dive below the water surface. They tip up and feed. And two, that have food that hasn't washed away by flooding.
All right. Now, before saving the clear and present hunting season till the last two segments of the show here, let's talk some teal. Blue wings. We're looking at, September 12th for the opener, right?
Yeah, September 12th through 27th. We get a 16-day teal season when the teal limits are high and the population's high. So the population's high this year again. Over 5 million birds is predicted.
What's an average year so people can compare that? I mean, that's what would be a mean average of that population?
It's been growing for several years now. The numbers are doing really well. So probably back in the day, it was probably around 2.5-3 million birds. Now
it's big.
a little over 5 million birds. It's almost doubled in the past 10 or 15 years.
Wow.
And so they're doing really well. And that allows us to have this special till season, early in the year. So it's you know, with only 16 days in the season, you know, it's hard to predict when these birds are going to come through. They're our first. The reason we have this season early too is that, you know, they're their first migrators. They move through, and by the time regular waterfowl season here, there's not many of them around. They've moved on to Central and South America, and so we want to take advantage of these high populations when we can, and allow these special seasons for people to harvest this natural resource that's in high abundance. We are looking forward to till season every year, and I predict that it's going to be a good fall flight. Whether we hit the timing right, who knows yet. We're probably seeing a few show up already, but not in big numbers yet. I imagine that at least one weekend out of the 3-weekend season, we'll have a good weekend for till hunting.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk when we get back a little more about that. And before we go to the break, remind maybe there's people that hadn't teal hunted in a long time. Number one, like you said, the season moves later, and the bag limit, that's changed.
Yeah, 6 a day. You can have 18 in possession. With the population being high, you take full advantage and have kill 6 a day. So, yeah, it's a really good early season to take advantage of as well.
Indeed. Coming right back, more with Seth Maddox from the state of Alabama, migratory bird coordinator, and we'll wrap it up and get ready for some bird hunting.
I'm ready to go.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, we're glad to have you here. And probably within the next hour and a half or so, the podcast will post up and you can go back and listen to parts you missed or share it with friends. Maybe your friend that thinks they can plant a winter crop of cracked corn. They can go back and listen to that. And we're talking with migratory...
There's some out there, Sean, I promise you.
Every year. And we're talking to migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox. And we're talking teal when we went to the break. I want to ask you this. Number one, I would like to talk about teal populations, but let's just take it at face value right now. They're looking fantastic. And what brings teal to the state? So we talked about calendar. We talked about push. As a biologist and as a guy that likes to duck hunt, what formula are you looking for? And you're in North Alabama, right? You hunt up there much or just around Montgomery?
Yeah, I hunt up there a lot. That's where I'm from. I live in Montgomery now, work out of the headquarters, so I don't get up there as much as I used to. But, it's, looking at teal hunting, it's all photo period, and you're looking just – they're only here for, a month maybe at a time during the fall flight. It's hard to predict when that will be. So it's hard to setting the season dates when you only have 16 days on. Photo period really gets at it. So we pushed the season dates back a week from what we used to have them, just so we could try to catch those birds and try to stack them in here a little more in a little larger numbers than what we have been seeing. Like I said, the population is really high right now, so I predict a good fall flight. If you got some good shallow water areas, you should be seeing teal here in the next couple weeks.
It's got to be a challenge, though, to be in your position and trying to set waterfowl seasons when we got a long state. I mean, it's a pretty good hike from Decatur to, Chocolata Bay.
Yeah, 6-hour drive. It is a long state. It is tough, like I said, the habitat in Alabama is somewhat lacking in that center part of the state. A really good two duck areas is the Tennessee River and the Mobile Delta and Bay. So a lot of ducks jump across that middle region in Alabama, but, wood ducks fill in all those gaps in between. So if you're looking for the big ducks, you're hunting in North Alabama or South Alabama. And so, it's kind of predictable what you can look for every year. That's kind of why we used to have two zones for waterfowl. Mm-hmm. And we went away from that just because there's really no, we're allowed to go to January 31st now for waterfowl seasons. There's really no point in having two zones when you can have three splits in a season.
Yeah, I started back in the days of three ducks in 30 days and the split zones for the state. But those story for another day. Let's talk about it down here, this neck of the woods. Mobile Tensaw Delta, over the last couple of years, new regulations put into effect to manage pressure and to have some no-motor zones. What are you seeing from that? And let's talk about that in teal season too. Are those the same rules in teal season?
No. So we have Big Batty Bay and Baygrass. Those are no operation of gas power motors, and that only takes effect from the second Saturday in November to the second Saturday in February. So that pretty much takes in the regular duck season. And we also have the Appalachia Refuge, which is in between I-10 and Highway 98 there. And so those areas are put in place to give the waterfowl a little rest, so they're not being bumped and pushed all the time. You know, that area in between the causeway and the interstate is it's kind of a hard area to hunt anyway during regular waterfowl season. So we wanted to give, you know, that area as a refuge to the ducks so they would stick around. They could bounce out and feed as needed in the surrounding areas. But give them a place to rest so that we can, you know, hold more birds in that area. Refuge is really key to in an area to hold more birds, to back birds into an area. They can sit there when they feel pressured, and then they can go out and feed when the pressure's a little lower. But yeah, those areas are only in effect during regular waterfowl season, so they're open to hunting during teal season.
All right, and is it too early? Are you getting some preliminary? Is there any way to gauge the success of those regulation, whether it's the refuge or the no motor zones? I mean, what's the human response?
You know, I think most people have liked it for the most part. They're seeing you're seeing some more ducks in areas where you wouldn't normally see them. You're having a chance to hunt ducks with a little less pressure on them. It's hard to judge sometimes when you have poor seasons, so. I would hate to say that it's been a huge success so far. We've only had it in place for about 3 years now, so we need a few more years worth of data to really look at what the success of these areas are accomplishing.
Talk just a minute left here too. I know we've on the show I do during the week here, always talking about the census and all that, and I know that's also important when it comes to the world of wildlife, right? And getting ourselves on the record for that, and hunting licenses, what it means for the state.
Yeah, you know, we don't get any tax dollars as far as Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, but you know, it's important to be counted in the census, and it helps the state overall in general. So it provides money for you to travel from your home to your duck hunting spot, provides money for roads and other big infrastructure projects. So, that's important to get counted out there and do the census. But, our license went on sale earlier this week, and so you can purchase your new license now. And I expect we saw a lot of more people out during turkey season, I think, due to COVID. And so I think that this fall we'll see a lot of more people in the duck blinds and in the deer woods this fall. Just because COVID's canceled a lot of other plans.
Do you, as we wrap it here, I know the three of us sitting here could say this, but where y'all been? You know, we hear the increase of people that are like, wow, during this you can still enjoy the great outdoors. And I'll say, yeah, well, we've been doing that a while.
We've been doing it forever. Nothing right. Stopped with us, yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to what we do. Seth, as always, I appreciate your time. Appreciate you being on the show. And, you know, I'm going to ring your phone as we get a little closer to the start of regular duck season.
Always a pleasure, guys. Look forward to it.
All right. It is the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll be back next week. More talk like this time of year. It's like fish, hunt, prep.
Yeah, a little prep.
Spraying here soon. Yeah, spraying. Yeah. Like all the people each year, all the questions about throwing mow and the spraying process and all that, I'll start laying that out in shows to come.
That's so. Working really good for you.
It is. Some places, I hadn't put a disc in the ground in 3 years, 4 years. Yeah, something like that.
Awesome.
It's good stuff. All right, Prep Sports Report next.